This is Pure Decking for Thursday, September the 26th. I forgot what year it was. 1982, I think. Is that sound about right? 1982?
Yeah, I'll be right back. I need to go watch Full House. Suddenly I have a hankering for some. It's on still, right?
Yeah, I'm sure it is. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like, you know, descending into a police state, InfoSec, and Full House. I'm Morps, and tonight we have Sard.
Awesome.
Not really. I used to actually watch that show.
Yeah? I mean, any kid from the 80s watched that show.
Well, it's like, you know, your parents would turn around and say, like, here, watch this. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Get off the fucking Nintendo. Here, go watch this. Oh, okay, because, yeah, that's better. Oh, hell. And it was back when the thing was actually still a Nintendo. It wasn't a Super Nintendo, or... I guess that makes me old.
No, it just makes you a classic gamer.
Classic gamer,
That's what we're going with.
Classic. But at least when somebody says Nintendo hard, I know what the hell they're talking about, right?
Sure, yeah.
So. I'm... not drinking anything interesting tonight. What about you?
Oh, the normal Shock Top.
Mm. I noticed I was out of pretty much everything except sake. And didn't get a chance to get to the liquor store. So I was experimenting with the sake, and I got something fairly close. If I had some Sprite or a club soda, I would have actually had an interesting drink with it. Just lime juice.
Put it in orange juice. Fox and I make sake and orange juice like mimosas, I guess you'd call them. Those will get you hammered.
Really?
They go down really smooth.
I don't have any orange juice, or I'd go do that like right fucking now. Cause
it works, trust me.
Oh, I'll have to try that.
Right now I'm drinking a Dark and Stormy. It's dark rum and ginger beer.
Well, I was playing around with a sake drink actually called a McLeod. And it was sake, scotch, and coke. But I didn't have any scotch, I had bourbon, so I decided to go with the Redneck Samurai, and that wasn't bad, but I kind of felt like I was ruining the bourbon.
Oh, yeah. Well, so, you guys always say never mix it, right?
You know, it depends. If it's good bourbons, if it's like, you know, Four Roses, Woodford's, yeah, you know, something up there, yeah, you don't want to mix that shit. But Jim Beam, basic off-the-shelf Jim Beam, you can mix it without getting kicked in the dick. I mean...
Any kind of bourbon you can get at the supermarket, you're pretty much okay to mix.
I mean, it's usually okay to mix that stuff, but you'll still get pointed and laughed at, and, you know, they'll give you the fruity cup at the bar if you order it. So... anyways. Let's see... I got a little bit of feedback from Psychros, but since it kind of rolls into what I thought we'd talk about today anyways, no real need to go into the details because he was asking us about SteamOS, and well, that's kind of what I wanted to talk about. And it was kind of funny, too, because when I brought up to Big that I was thinking we'd do SteamOS as the discussion for tonight, he was like, what, really? He didn't think it fit.
Oh, really? So, I mean, I don't know. Haven't we talked about games and Linux and stuff like that before on the show?
Well, tangent. I mean, we don't really go into gaming. I mean, we mention it every once in a while. But
yeah.
I'm interested in SteamOS, at least as far as decking is concerned, for a very different reason than just gaming.
Okay.
And if you think about it, Steam is essentially going to make another Android. At least I think that's what they're going to do. I don't see them billing this thing. And yeah, they'll say it's Linux underneath, but I don't see them saying, hey, you can go drop KDE on this. It'll be a general purpose distro. No, I think they're going to build an Android. I think it's basically going to be just something to hold Steam, sort of like what Google did with the Chrome OS. It's just the underpinnings to hold their interface.
Right.
So I imagine that's what Steam...
You're obviously going to have to fill it with like big shiny buttons for your average end user to be anywhere interested in it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Have you seen full screen Steam or
Yeah, right. I accidentally clicked on Big Picture the other day.
Big Picture, that's the one I'm... Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's meant to go up on a TV. So, you know, I guess for anybody who's not in the know, Steam is developing their own Linux distribution to run, well, their console, pretty much. But they're going to also put it out as a general purpose Linux. They're going to put it out as a general purpose Linux that you could just download and drop on your own machine. Now, they haven't talked about... They haven't talked about what hardware requirements or how this thing's actually going to work. They've got a lot of marketing speak. I copied some of that into the notes here. But, sure, I can get you show notes. Why not? So, what I think's going on is, like I said, I think they're going to make another Android. They're talking about, you know, you're going to be able to stream movies, TVs, TV shows, music, and your Windows and Mac games to the Steam box. So, like, if you've got a game that's Windows only, they're talking about being able to stream it to the Steam box, which is interesting.
Yeah. Are they going to do that?
I imagine it's going to be a form of a VNC. I mean, you know, something with a fair bit of compression and
some speed on it. With the magic of the cloud, Sarge. Embrace the cloud.
Yeah,
you do that.
No thanks.
A cloud of cocaine you're throwing into the air.
So, anyways, I don't know. I mean, a lot of people, right now, if you're going around the board, say, you know, you got some people who, like me, they think this thing is going to be another Android. And then you got everybody else who thinks this is going to be the, you know, the consumer version of Linux that the Nix heads have been dreaming about from descending upon high. And, you know, you can already see the people just passing out, imagining Gaben handing out Linux to the masses. So, you know, here you go. But
like you said before, it's not really Linux. Well, I mean, it is Linux, but no one's ever going to see it.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to drop... I seriously doubt that they will, like, you know, go drop KDE on here. Here's your browser. I don't imagine this being a distro you'd load on your regular desktop machine just as a general-purpose distro. But I do think it will be a drop-in gaming environment just to get Steam up and running on something.
Yeah, I agree.
If it does like start showing itself as a, you know, promising sell for gaming, you might actually see people throwing it on their computers as a shell of Linux just to run all the Steam games on their computer as well.
Absolutely. You know, I could easily see dual booting this thing, or
it's the foot in the door, I guess. It shows people, look, Linux isn't scary. It's not all command line and super hackers.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting though, because they're not hiding the fact that it's Linux either. So I think you'll get that same kind of, I guess you'd call it a subculture, an Android, of people who like to get in and muck around with the versions of it and, you know, put together the different images, different ROMs, get into the hardware hacking, the kernel hacking. You know, it's kind of interesting. As far as consoles go, normally they always have the same hardware so that your developers can optimize for it. Since Steam's just putting it out as a software platform, you're going to kind of see a mix. And they haven't even put out what kind of hardware this thing's going to have to run on. I mean, can you drop it on a Chromecast and then stream everything from a Windows box in the back room?
That'd be cool, but I doubt it.
That'd be awesome, but no, it's going to need... where is the graphics processing done? That's going to be the ultimate question.
Yeah, exactly.
But this thing... there's going to be a lot of good that comes from this, and this is why I want to talk about it. They're going to push hardware makers to support Linux. I've got a link to a PC World article, but, I mean, the stories are all over the place. Like, the day after SteamOS was announced, NVIDIA put out a big statement saying they were going to help the Nauvoo guys and try to improve their driver support. Just yesterday, ATI put out a big thing saying they were trying to improve Radon support, and they were trying to get better ATI drivers on Linux, which apparently the ATI drivers on Linux have been a lot better as of late. So,
with as hard as Microsoft's been shitting the bed lately with their OS releases, and I'm not really shocked that, you know, these graphic card manufacturers and other game manufacturers are starting to look to alternative options to, you know, not have to pay out the ass to Microsoft to get their, you know, genuine license advantage to work on their new shit systems.
But here's the thing, though. All the graphics cards makers for the past, I don't know what, 5, maybe 7 years, they've all been building their cards to DirectX, not OpenGL. It used to be they kind of supported several different things, and then they slowly dropped off to the point where OpenGL has been a second-class citizen. All these cards were designed to run DirectX, and now everybody's up and going to Linux for SteamOS, or at least that's certainly what it looks like. you know, it might take another round of hardware refreshments to really get this thing running right.
Yeah, which makes sense. But I mean, I'm okay with that. I think a lot of people, like I said, the Linux fanboys have wanted to have it out there in the open more. I mean, I think it helps that image, and it's great that it will help hardware manufacturers and all that, and get that support there. But in my opinion, it's still not good enough as far as getting Linux known out there in the world, because people use Linux every day and they don't even realize it. I mean, how many people that use Android phones understand what's actually behind that? Or they use a
not very DVD many, player Java's or something. A complicated bitch, but
well, yeah, but you know what I mean. What's actually running on there? You know, it's. So until that really comes to the forefront, I don't think people are going to realize that it's an actual alternative, that yes, you can actually run this on your computer too. You don't have to use Windows and stuff, yeah. But it's a step in the right direction, I think.
Yeah, I think they've tried to go too hard and fast of like, behold Linux. I think they would get a lot of pushback from people of, oh my god, I fear change.
Yeah,
but
that's,
you put it in this nice, put in this nice pretty package, like, look everybody, it's Linux. It'll be okay. You can play games and shit.
I want to see that be in the tagline. It's like SteamOS. You can play games and shit.
Yes. Marketing awesome. Done.
Okay, we'll accept our consultancy check now from Valve. And so
I was going to say, the only, like, the real tinfoil hat bit on this is Half-Life 3, only for the SteamOS.
Ooh, that'd be interesting.
Oh, mm-hmm.
I'd like that, though. I mean, it's free, so it's not like they're saying you got to go buy something. They're just, you know, here, go boot this live disk and try it. I mean,
Yeah. That's
the thing. Is this thing going to be, I mean, most Linuxes you can boot up off a flash drive or a CD. Are they going to pump out, I guess it'd be a live USB image?
Right.
That'd be kind of cool.
Because there's the Steam box that they were going with for a while there, too. So, like, how much storage capacity you really need on this, or is it just gonna be like completely new based and have very limited, like,
I don't know. Fox, do you have a fan pointed at your microphone? I'm just curious.
I don't. Are you getting a lot of hum and bullshit? I tweaked a bunch of things and already was here.
Aesthetic. The only other thing I wanted to talk about this is, like, you said, you know, it'll improve driver support and all that, and how NVIDIA came out with that announcement that they're going to help Nuvo with their drivers and all that. I would like to think that that is not because of SteamOS. I would like to think that's because Linus gave them the finger and told them fuck you directly to their face.
I hope so.
That was hilarious.
That was awesome.
That was so awesome.
So, I mean, It was their high low power stuff that drove that, because up until not too long ago, I always went with NVIDIA cards because I always assumed their Linux support was better, because you could go grab their closed source driver and get the thing working, which is mostly still true. But I know a lot of people don't like their closed source driver, so
purely because it's closed source.
Yeah, I'll be honest, I don't get that worked up about open versus closed source anymore. I kind of used to, but anymore, I don't have time for that shit. I just want my box to work.
I totally agree. Yeah.
Totally agree. If it's open, that's awesome. You can go look at the code. If it's not, but you need it to make the box work, well, there are worse things in this world. So, I don't know. Anyways, they were talking about on the SteamOS page how they've already done some performance improvements on the graphics side of Linux, and they're talking about doing other improvements, audio-wise and a few other things, on their blurb pages. There's just not enough freaking details on their webpage, really. But I'm hoping we're going to see all these performance improvements they're talking about get backported to Linux. And I'm hoping they backport a lot of the Linux native Steam client, to the Linux native Steam client, a lot of the features from SteamOS, so that, you know, let's say I don't want to run their slimmed down OS, I just want to drop Steam on my desktop. Well, with that streaming thing, maybe I could still drop a Windows box over in the corner somewhere and lock it down so that nobody ever opens a web browser on it, and have a way to run my games without requiring virtual machines or Wine or something like that.
Yeah, I hope so, man. That would be awesome. That would be really cool.
But like, they don't even have a release date for this yet. It's just downloadable soon.
Yeah.
So that might be why they're kind of holding back on their information on it. Like, they don't
actually know.
Yeah.
Let's just hope it's not actually vaporware.
Yeah. Oh, now with Steam, I really don't think it is. And they're a big enough company that it wouldn't just poof. They've got a good enough drive to do this with, you know, Windows.
That's true. I mean, they already did put out the Linux team. So
yeah,
is my mic any better, by the way?
Yes, you managed to eliminate a lot of that white noise. So it's certainly much better than it was. We can actually understand you now, which is handy.
Right.
So the other thing is, I do want to see when this thing drops how many people go absolutely ballistic figuring out that it's Ubuntu and jacking in repos and turning it into a desktop OS. I mean, as opposed to going the other way around, just grabbing Ubuntu and dropping the SteamOS packages on it, I imagine you're going to have people trying to, you know, trying to go the other way.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure it'll be out there.
The agent could do a video series on something like that.
No, if we could find him.
Sprinkle some crack outside on your lawn. He might show up.
I'm afraid of what else might show up.
That's why you like load up on your paintballs and your CO2 first.
Paintballs? Fuck, 12 gauge.
No. You put the paintballs in the freezer first.
Oh, well, why not just use marbles?
Or ball bearings.
No.
You don't, I mean, I wouldn't use marbles. Those are glass. You know, you don't walk across your lawn, get half a marble embedded in your foot.
Yeah, I could see that. So, in the IRC, they're correcting me. They're saying that marbles don't go through most paintball guns. So, oh well.
There's many sizes of ball bearings.
Yeah. Oh, Iron Angel says he friggin' tried. Did you bore out the paintball gun, or did you try to shave down the marbles? I'm just curious. Because a bored out paintball gun would actually be kind of awesome.
That would be cool.
It's like, what'd you do? He just made a barrel.
There you go.
There you go. That works. All right, let's go ahead and get on to current events here, news stories. First one up I have is from Ars Technica. We've all done or said stupid things online at some point or another, but if you're a Californian under 18, you'll soon have the right to delete those stupid things. California has put in place the first state law that requires companies, websites, and app developers to give kids under the age of 18 the option to delete a post. The law, SB 568, which was signed by Governor Jerry Brown on Monday and takes effect on January 1 of 2015, imposes onto web companies and app makers this new requirement. Those firms must now provide clear instructions to a minor who is a registered user of the operator's internet website, online service, online application, or mobile application on how the user may remove or, if the operator prefers, request and obtain the removal of content or information posted on the operator's internet website, online service, online application, or mobile application. The law has received praise from its primary sponsor, who's obviously never written a website. This is a groundbreaking protection for our kids, who will act impetuously with postings of ill-advised pictures or messages. You know, why, you never thought about just talking to the kids and saying, hey, don't post that picture of you mooning a bar?
No, we have to think of the fucking children and protect them.
This is cute, state. Though. Did they not know how the internet works?
Not at all.
Hell, Beyonce wanted a picture gone. Let's see how that worked out for her.
Exactly. And it's a state law, so how the hell... This doesn't even make any sense.
Well, it gets better.
It's to appease the soccer moms. This is total bullshit.
Yeah, it gets even better. Let's see. Ill-advised pictures and messages before they think through the consequences, said State Senator Daryl Steinberg, Democrat of Sacramento, in a statement. They deserve the right to remove this material that could haunt them for years to come. Welcome to fucking 4chan. However, some legal analysts have some quibbles with exactly how the law's language was drafted. Really? You never thought to talk to people who run websites, did you? The eraser provision is part of a new, larger law, Privacy Rights for California Minors in the Digital World, that was added to California's business code. The first section of this digital world law focuses on not allowing sites and services that are directed to minors to compile or disclose information about a minor if that compilation or disclosure is for purposes of marketing or advertising products or services to that minor. So the primary way they fund, you know, free stuff on the internet, you know, throwing ads all over it, if it's for minors, that's now illegal in California. What exactly is a site directed to minors, and why wouldn't Facebook and Twitter, who both already allow users, regardless of age, to delete posts and tweets, already be in compliance? Neither Senator Steinberg's office nor Twitter immediately responded to ours request for comment on this post, while Facebook declined to comment. So, while the Center for Democracy and Technology understands that SB 568 was motivated by the best of intentions, we remain concerned that the bill's focus on sites directed to minors under the age of 18 will leave operators of websites that are popular with older teens and young adults uncertain of their obligations under the law. Emma Losanto, a staff attorney for the Center of Democracy and Technology, wrote to ours in an email. What if it's a website that doesn't operate out of California?
That's what I'm saying. This law is stupid.
It's so. Californian law. Of course it's stupid.
The biggest nanny state in the whole union. It's ridiculous.
Well, somebody's actually got some interesting points here. Our primary concern is that this legal uncertainty will discourage operators from developing content and services tailored to younger users. No, that's not what's going to happen. They're just going to say 18 plus required.
Yes, because everybody, doesn't lie on that age verification.
Doesn't matter.
Sign in.
No. In a legal standpoint, it doesn't matter. If you say, look, our site's 18 and over only, and the minor lied to get in, yeah, I'm sorry. We're not required to be in compliance because they're not supposed to be on here in the first place.
I guess it's a right. Good piece of cover your own ass.
So that's how I'd do it.
Any liquor website that you go to, you always have to prove your age. Well, Johnny's going to click, yeah, I was born in 1967. Click through. Oh, look, boobs and Tila. Yay.
So, well, that'll be a funny point when this first comes up. The first time this comes up, and it's like, well, the kid lied about their age. Does that make the website still responsible to have to give them a means to delete their posts? And of course,
in
it's Nanny State,
yes.
California. They'll say yes.
God, I hate California. California.
So, you know what? I'm not even going to read the rest of that story because it's basically people not sure what the law means.
Well, I mean, come on. It's going to be pretty much impossible to completely enforce this law. I mean, somebody puts up a stupid picture and it hits a, major, let's say, image board that shouldn't be mentioned. It's not going away. It's just going to get out there. If it's something funny enough that it's going to, be that big of a hit, they're going to want it deleted.
What was the phrase? Consequences will never be the same?
Yeah.
Yeah, because, this whole idea of forcing the internet to delete something works so well.
Yeah, I mean, you just can't backtrace that picture.
You mean CSI is wrong? I thought you could backtrace everything.
No, you can zoom and enhance and look around corners, but you can't backtrace.
It's just, it's like the freaking pussification of America. Like, no, there, you know, there can't be consequences for your action. You should always go back, be able to go back and push delete on everything that you do.
Well, I mean, one thing I will play devil's advocate on here is, Sard, how many times would we have been fucked over if there had been a camera anywhere near us growing up?
Well, yeah, but still, I mean, if there was a camera around us, we should have said something and said, hey, don't post any of those pictures anywhere, or hey, give me a copy, you know? It's like, there's still consequences for your action there.
There with is. This,
they're trying to make it such a freaking nanny state that there's no consequences.
But do you think these kids these days, like, damn kids these days, even think about there being something recording them nearby?
No, they don't have a fucking clue.
No, because it's just part of life. It's just the way it is.
Like, well, then they better be really fucking careful, like way more careful than we were for that.
Should we make it a law? Let's say burns their name into the middle of a street.
Yes.
And suddenly now it's on camera instead of just their name melted into the asphalt for the next like year and a half.
I don't know what you're talking about. Yes, okay, continue.
And so everybody that drives by it knows exactly who that person is. You can't just go and delete that out of the road until they come by and pave it. I think it's the same thing. Kids are going to have to, like, you did something stupid. These are the consequences for it. This is what we like to call life.
Exactly.
Learn to fucking deal with it.
There's no delete button on that asphalt. It's there.
I'm curious. What
consequences?
Hypothetically, if you wanted to burn something into asphalt, what tools would have been used?
I hear rubbing alcohol works really well.
Mixed with
just
some
lighting it up.
Kerosene
and lighting
some
it
kerosene.
Up. Okay. Yeah. Gas will do it too.
I've heard it works pretty well.
Okay. I was just curious.
Gas
is
better for making a paladin sword, allegedly.
Allegedly.
Nice.
I heard a guy do that once or twice or maybe.
Yeah. We almost made the Ghost Rider horse out of that too. I mean, allegedly, these people almost made a Ghost Rider horse.
Yeah, I want to point out, it only affects us. I think the Q output sounds so much better since the last time we rebuilt the box.
Yeah, it sounds good, man. Anyways.
No, thermite in the middle of the road is a bad idea, Iron. I should not be watching the IRC. I'm trying to do a fucking show here.
That sounds like an awesome idea. Hey, Star, do you still get that rust powder?
I'm going to either confirm
or deny. I mean, do you know that friend
deny.
That still has that?
I cannot confirm or deny.
And the entire drainage system under 3rd Street has been destroyed for reasons we can't quite seem to figure out.
Weird. It looks like something burned all the way through it. How does that happen? Huh?
Jeez, you imagine some poor schlob accidentally driving over it while it's still burning?
Oh. Now, 3rd Street is too close to the Capitol. There's too many cameras there.
All right, next one up is from Torrent Freak. Earlier this month, Heat, H33T, one of the largest BitTorrent sites, mysteriously disappeared from the internet. The name servers had been wiped from the domain records, rendering it useless. Torrent Freak contacted Heat's domain registrar, the German company Key Systems, who confirmed that they were forced to take this action following a local court order obtained by Universal Music Group. We have indeed been served with a court order granting a temporary injunction requiring us to ensure certain content is not made available, Key Systems' Volker Grumman previously told us. Recognizing that the case sets a dangerous precedent, the registrar is going to fight the injunction in court. One of the issues Key Systems plans to raise is that the site owner himself was never contacted by the music group. The registrar asked Heat owner Shelby whether he is willing to testify in court, and he agreed to do so. I am ready to go in person. If they don't already know my name, then they truly are disorganized. It was never a secret, Shelby informed Storm Freak. Heat's owner had previously spoken out against the commonly adopted DMCA-style takedown procedure most copyright holders expect him to comply with. Heat will take content offline, but only if copyright holders pay an administrative fee to cover some of the costs. I remember talking about this guy when he started charging people to take down DMCA or to comply DMCA compliance.
It's a brilliant idea.
So apparently, Universal Music just went and got his domain revoked. So, yeah. Shelby believes that this is ultimately the issue that has to be tested in court. I don't believe that my identity is the issue, but the sharing of costs for takedowns. Given the opportunity, since this is a test of a takedown procedure, I will ensure my testimony and the court record contains my solutions for equitable management of takedowns. The lawyer who said my takedown procedure was not serious is now going to find out how serious it actually is, he says. He has always been one of the most pro-sharing communities, and the site's owner sees himself as a front runner in the battle against the old and outdated industry. The enemy is not a person or a cell phone. The enemy is not a person. There is no hive mind conspiring against us to repress us in some Orwellian nightmare, he says. The enemy is a dinosaur system which might have been good enough to manage a analog industry of vinyl records and VHS cassettes, but if the internet has taught us anything, that is that the digital revolution is full of surprises and opportunities. The last thing we need is an outdated system or outdated systems and laws getting in the way, holding us back from basically do what we do best, being social, making friends, and improving ourselves by learning and developing new tools. Heat's owner believes that the law is on his side. The DMCA doesn't apply in Europe, and there are no clearly defined notice and takedown procedures, and Heat believes their policy is reasonable. By showing that Universal Music Group misrepresented the facts, he eventually hopes to get his domain back. If I win this appeal and win back my domain, it's because anti-P2P companies acted illegally and dishonestly by misleading the court and telling lies. So I'm going to quit reading there. Pretty much.
You mean people would do that? Just go on the internet and tell lies?
Oh, well, not only that, but Universal Music took this guy's domain in a place where the DMCA technically doesn't apply.
Yeah.
Exactly. I see a strong countersuit coming out of this for like wages lost.
It's fucked up. Who made them like gatekeepers of the internet? Like, how the fuck did they even get that to go through? That's what I don't get.
They use some lawyer to throw some lawyer speak at some poor like level one tech support in a call center at 2 a.m. and like threatened to go and rape his family with cactuses, and he's like, "All right, man, I'll just shut it down."
Yeah, I wish I could high five this Heat guy through the internet, man. He's got the right idea. That's awesome.
Well, I love the concept of saying, "Yeah, we'll comply with the DMCA takedown. Our fee is X."
Yeah. Because
I mean, it's
there's
true.
There's nothing that's making him.
You get this blanket order of like, hey, do this work on your system. Well, okay, you're going to pay me for my time. Now, technically, my time is not normally worth $500 an hour, but in this case, I'll make an exception.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you're wanting me to do work on your behalf. It's just like them wanting the freaking ISPs to patrol the internet for them. That's not their fucking job. They're an internet service provider. They provide internet.
Yeah, I figure if the music industry can charge like $250,000 a song, you know, a couple grand per song I take down isn't too much of a...
Well, it would certainly force them to actually check out. I mean, because they just blanket send the damn things out right now because they get to do it for free.
Right.
So if you actually made them, even if the fee was something dumb like $5, it would at least force them to actually manage these complaints they send out and make sure they're not for, say, a fucking copier. Not that that hasn't happened. You know,
or open source software that has every right to be out there.
Well, we had the story last week about how they fully expected Google to filter the internet for them.
Yeah, it's fucking stupid.
And hey, hats off to Google for telling them to, in no uncertain terms, suck a fat cock.
Yeah. I'm still waiting. I mean, more and more shit like this is coming. I think we even had a story about it last week, whatever. But, you know, it's not going to be the internet anymore. It's going to be the U.S.'s internet, and then it's going to be Germany's internet, and it's going
Brazil's
to be Belgium's internet. Yeah, exactly. It's going to be a bunch of, you know, private darknets, essentially, that might have some interconnections into other people's lands, but, I mean, how else are you going to get this shit to stop? It's like RIAA is going to be like, yeah, you know, you have to take that domain down. Even though in your completely different country, we have no jurisdiction over you. How They have no right to take that.
It's people like this that are telling them to fuck off and taking it and hitting them where it hurts in their wallet. That's going to make it stop. Because like that's the saddest thing I can think of is taking this huge repository of all human knowledge and like fragmenting it into
and segregating it.
Yeah, it's a load of crap.
Yeah,
I think this guy is awesome for taking them on and totally like, hey, I'll be more than willing to comply. This is my fee for doing it. That's a brilliant idea.
Absolutely. I mean, there's no legal compulsion for a site hosted outside of the United States to follow the DMCA. So if they want to send him and get it to do it, billing them is a fantastic idea.
And you already have Kim.com. He's going back after everybody was part of his takedown. He's like, there was legitimate like business documents and people's data that they lost when they just were rushing in and were seizing your server for no fucking reason.
Never mind, you know, just the whole violation of due process.
Yeah.
His entire business was taken from him and shut down. And
at the drop of a hat.
Yeah, and he never got a day in court. Yeah. Now, I don't much care for the guy. He comes across as a douche, but I mean, what happened to him was not right.
Yeah, he's a douche, but he got fucked over in a place where the law should have protected him, and he should have had his due process.
It's apply to everyone, everywhere type thing. It's not right for that to happen just because there might be foul trading on your site. So,
and I might be using a photocopier to copy books. Are you going to go smash every fucking photocopier?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, you... Like, back in the 80s, like, oh, you have two VCRs in your house. You must be a pirate.
Oh, for God's sake. You could buy boomboxes that advertised they had two tape decks specifically for copying.
And look, the music industry still thrived. And lo, even with the rampant piracy that we have today, the music industry is still thriving.
No, it's not. It's actually in decline still. We just did a story about that last week. That's the awesome thing, is piracy has gone down, supposedly. Well, guess what? The music industry is still making less money. So imagine it's not piracy that's making them lose money.
We think it's alternative business models, things like Bandcamp, things like YouTube, Spotify.
People are getting smart and understanding they don't have to go buy that $20, $25 CD anymore. Plus, who wants that shit anymore? You know, it's...
Yeah.
It's like, just like the dude said, it's an old antiquated system. What did he say? A dinosaur system. You know? It's got to evolve and change or else it's not going to make it.
So the next story up I have is from The Verge. YouTube includes a number of simple production tools to help filmmakers improve their projects. But today it's launching one that could be huge for low, no-budget shooters. A library of completely free music that can be used in any video, even ones that don't end up on YouTube. The YouTube Audio Library is launching with 150 tracks in genres spanning from funky dance and electronic to sappy country tunes, all of which can be streamed and downloaded as 320 kbps MP3 files. You might expect them to be corny jams or forgettable music, and some certainly are, but there are absolutely some gems within the collection that do a great job representing their genre without feeling like a knockoff product. Though the cost of great cameras for filming has been going down, there are still plenty of areas of production that can bump up costs, like editing software, camera rigs, and music. There are a lot of troves of licensed free music on the web, and their quality is unsurprisingly mixed. Subscription services that provide access to higher quality licensed free music are available, but they're just another budget increase for a segment of filmmaking that's costs are trying to go lower and lower. And for YouTube, giving filmmakers easy access to royalty-free music could lead to less videos that include copyrighted tracks and, importantly, less video takedowns. So, this is kind of cool.
It is cool.
But at the same time, this is like what we fucking do.
Yeah.
I'm
going to laugh because you know there's going to be a follow-up story to this that says, you know, RIAA posts all these slews of these URLs of videos on YouTube using pirated content. Yeah. All this music in the background is copyright.
We're just going to claim all the music on the YouTube service now? Wait, what?
Exactly. I mean, they copyrighted The Sound of Wind, wasn't it?
Yeah.
How the fuck, like,
and birds
that's retarded.
Chirping.
Yeah, and birds chirping. There's no way. It's a nice idea, but good luck.
Yeah. Well, I just, you know, there's only 150 songs in there that they're launching with. So I imagine as soon as that thing gets going, like, you're going to get tired of hearing the same, you know, five good songs out of the 150.
That's
like
true.
Everyone's going to pick up and use.
Right.
I mean, come on. It's the same thing like what every Battlefield video ever was bodies hit the floor for like 3 years.
Like every Quake video was let the bodies hit the floor. That's all it was. Which is too bad because it was a good song and you just got so sick of it.
It was used everywhere, like I said. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they start doing with that. But
they seem to uncopyright Guile's theme because apparently that goes with everything.
The real question is Rick Ashley in the?
I mean, he should be one of the big proponents for, you know, getting your music out there on the internet because that's what made him famous again.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, any video we ever post for G15, if we ever get into doing that kind of stuff, it's not going on YouTube. I'll go use Vimeo or something because I'm just not dealing with all the bullshit copyright that they get hit with.
Blame
so, I mean, it's so crazy. Everything gets, somebody claims it doesn't matter what you put up, can be completely original. Like every bit is completely original. Somebody's going to come in and claim it just so they can put ads all over your video. I'm just not even dealing.
Right.
So. And, you know, it sucks because YouTube's a decent service, but I don't tell anybody to use it anymore because you can't guarantee that your stuff is going to stay up. Like, oh, in the background, you had a picture of the cover of a book, and that's copyrighted, so therefore we get to own your video.
Jesus.
So, I mean, it's I might be exaggerating, but I'm not sure. So,
well, it looks like it's moving that direction. Yeah.
So. Anyways, let's see, where was I? Torrent Freak. Next story is from Torrent Freak. Last month, the MPAA announced a major victory in its case against file hosting service Hotfile. A redacted copy of the verdict was released this week, confirming that the movie studio won summary judgment on the issues of DMCA defense and vicarious liability. The remaining issues will be fought out in a trial later this year. What the MPAA didn't mention is that the issue of Warner Brothers' alleged abuse of Hotfile's anti-piracy tool will also go to jury. For anybody who doesn't remember, Hotfile gave Warner Brothers and several other movie studios access to their back end and just said, look, we can't keep up with the number of complaints you're sending us, so you can just take them down. Here's the link.
Oh, that's an awful idea.
And, of course, Warner Brothers went in and just started taking down every fucking thing.
Yeah.
Even stuff they didn't own.
So. They charged them for it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So Hotfile sued the movie studio 2 years ago for abusing the DMCA takedown process on numerous occasions. The file hoster alleged that after giving Warner access to its systems, the studio wrongfully took down hundreds of files, including game demos and open source software, without holding copyrights to them. The takedowns continued even after the movie studio was repeatedly notified about the false claims. That's probably because they had it hooked up to one of their auto detection scripts, and it was just, you know, going nuts. In a response, Warner Brothers admitted the accusations. However, the movie studio argued that they are not to blame since the mistakes were made by a computer, not a person. Oh, well.
Wait, I don't download anything. My computer downloads everything.
Exactly.
I'm not to blame.
Therefore, yeah, you can't be fucking Warner Brothers.
I didn't shoot that man. My shotgun did that.
Yeah, that's fucking stupid.
Of course, you know, when it's in their favor. Nope, wasn't us, it was a computer.
Oh, God, I hate these people.
As a result, the false takedown requests were not deliberate lies. Warner Brothers asked the court for summary judgment in its favor, but Florida District Court Judge Kathleen Williams had decided to let the issue be heard before a jury. There is sufficient evidence on the record to suggest that Warner intentionally targeted files that it knew it had no right to remove. This precludes summary judgment in Warner Brothers' favor, the judge writes. Judge Williams notes that Warner Brothers does not dispute these erroneous takedowns. The movie studio claimed that these mistakes were unavoidable, but also admitted that it did not check where the infringing titles actually pointed to their content. No due diligence whatsoever. Just, oh, that looks like it's ours, click. In addition, there are several other factors the jury will have to make a decision on. Warner readily admits that mistakes do occur, and Hotfile has identified characteristics that might be responsible for engendering those mistakes. For example, Warner staff did not download or review any Hotfile content before marking it for removal. Warner Brothers has targeted copyrighted works for other copyright holders, Electronic Arts, for example. The movie studio also removed the software JDownloader, which was offered legally, and no less than 8 times for reasons that are redacted in the verdict. Specifically, Hotfile has provided examples of JDownloader, which Warner did not manage, and it was redacted. It also showed Warner's interest in the application of its takedown rights beyond the works it owns, and Warner has not otherwise argued that it had the right to remove those files, only that mistakes should be excused. So, Warner Brothers, yeah, basically, oh, no, we're allowed to do that, you're not, fuck you. We yeah. win, fuck you. That's essentially Warner's argument.
Our mistakes should be excused, but we're going to charge this 14-year-old, like, $150 million for downloading a copy of Up.
Yeah.
So...
No words.
Scumbags.
Well, the whole Digital Millennium Copyright Act is so fucking slanted. Nobody should be surprised. I mean, really, if you go look at the law, it is so fucking slanted.
Well, not only is it slanted, it's judged on and brought up by people who either A, have no idea what the hell they're talking about, or B, are only in their company's best interests of making more money.
But not only that, it puts all the onus on ISPs and technology services. There is zero onus on copyright holders. So, of course, they can just spam the shit out of everybody. I mean, you know, you just get mad. Anybody who's had to deal with these DMCA, I have a personal hatred because I have to deal with DMCA takedown requests at work all the fucking time. Like, I took a couple of days off and came back to 30 of the fucking things.
And this is where I'm just going to tip my hat again to Heat. For like, yeah, sure, we'll be more than happy to do that for an administrative fee.
Oh, I don't get that choice. There are laws on the books that essentially my organization, we don't get a choice.
I understand that your organization kind of has its hands tied. But, you know, as far as... Hotfile. Like, Hotfile could have definitely gone the way of Heat and probably saved themselves this trouble and made a tasty profit off of it to boot.
Yeah, no kidding. Here's access to our system for every link you take down. We're going to charge your credit card $30. I mean...
Yeah.
Yeah, at least make them look at it and make sure... I mean, hell, do the dollar charge just so that they're not abusing the hell out of the system. You know, the moment there's any amount of money involved, somebody's checking it. I mean, mm-hmm. even... You don't just get this blanket. You know, fuck it. It's the reason we get so many DMCA complaints are the same reason people get so much spam. It's free to send them out.
Yeah.
So, hell, our spam filter actually thinks almost every DMCA complaint we get, it thinks is spam because it fits all the profiles. Requests for money, unsolicited, has a bunch of buzzwords in it. I mean, it looks like fucking spam. To most of your spam filters. So, I'm sure we miss a bunch because they all go in the fucking spam thing.
And nothing of value is lost.
Oh, I've gotten angry emails from them before saying, you know, your system blacklisted us. It's like, well, it thought you were sending spam. Well, it's not spam.
Well, you sent me 500 emails on Tuesday. Fuck you.
Yeah. No, it's not actually, spam.
Actually, the one that sent us, the one that got blacklisted for sending spam, what they had done was their system was identifying, well, a laptop that somebody was sharing a discography on, something like 700 tracks, and it sent a single notice for every file in the torrent.
Oh,
geez.
And because it was on Wi-Fi, it changed its IP address a couple of times. So every time its IP changed, they tried to send a new batch of complaints. So, they tried to send us something on the order of 4,000 DMCA complaints, and after the first 100, our system blocked them as spammers. And sent them a notice saying, your email server has been blacklisted. And so we got some nasty phone calls. It was hilarious. Like, well, why are you trying to send that many? Well, obviously, you're sharing our content. Well, no, look, it's some user on our network with a freaking BitTorrent client. We will fix the problem, but you don't need to blow up my email box to do it. But they don't understand that. They don't care because, you know, just their script broke and then they got a nasty note. So, anyways. Let's see. Next story up. This one's from ZDNet and is fucking hilarious. Would-be clients of upscale escorts in Birmingham, UK now have a way to pay for their escort services that's just as discreet as cash and more secure. Bitcoin has officially entered the realm of sex work. The world's oldest profession met the world's youngest currency as escort agency Passion VIP announced it now accepts payment for its adult companion services in Bitcoin. Located in the second most populous British city after London, Passion VIP is hoping the introduction of Bitcoin payments will open up a new market by giving clients an alternative payment method. Bitcoin VIP told ZDNet, "We felt there are probably a lot of people out there who had Bitcoins and no way to really enjoy spending them. Accepting Bitcoins seemed an obvious extension of our own interest in the currency. Bitcoin is called the currency of the internet. It is a new peer-to-peer exchange decentralized electronic form of cash that can also be described as cryptocurrency. It is independent of any central authority, and Bitcoins can be transferred through a computer or smartphone without intermediate financial or without an intermediate financial institution. In a recent announcement, the plucky UK escort service added Bitcoin transactions to its online prepayment menu. Customers can now order up the companionship they desire and pay in Bitcoins on Passion VIP's website." I'm not going to make it through this without just bursting out laughing. clients simply contact the agency's receptionist and say they want to pay with Bitcoin, confirm the booking times, and then send payment via Passion VIP's Bitcoin address. And on its Not Safe for Work Bitcoin Escorts page. Actually, the original article has links all over this Passion VIP site. So it's
agency got paid in a bit of Bitcoin.
Yeah. Its Bitcoin Escorts page also has handy scannable QR codes if clients want to speed up the transaction.
Oh, tell me they're getting the horrors tatted with QR codes.
No, it doesn't sound like it. It sounds like it's just on the webpage for now, but I could see that in the future.
You go up and scan, like, are you...
Well, it's sort of like swiping your credit card through the butt crack, but in this case, you just hold the camera up.
Which ass do you want tonight? Scan. Thank you. Please deposit. One Bitcoin.
The page also includes basic information about Bitcoin transactions and links for people who want to learn more or open an account. The savvy UK adult business explained, "Clients who already hold Bitcoins can use them immediately. Those who aren't familiar with the currency will find information on our website of how to buy and trade in Bitcoin. Once the client's payment is processed, Passion VIP calls the client back with a confirmation and the date is set, with no one worrying about payment, theft, or counterfeit on either side of the transaction. The workers also can't be forced to return the money, even if under duress." Oh, I guess that was a thing, people trying to pull the Grand Theft Auto thing.
So, could you imagine, like, if the escort had different QR codes on different parts of her body? It's like, to unlock this area, please deposit another Bitcoin.
The microtransaction sex bot.
Wow. Oh, it gets better. It could also make it difficult for police to prove that sex was had as a result of a financial transaction. Additionally, with Bitcoin, clients don't run the risk of an odd-looking transaction from a foreign country appearing on their credit card bills. In this business model, it stands to reason that Bitcoin could make high-risk work, such as escorting, less dangerous and more business-like. Passion VIP told ZDNet, "There are several advantages for both escorts and clients. For clients, the advantage is that it's totally anonymous. You could argue that cash is anonymous too, but not in the same way. For the escorts, it's an easy and anonymous way to accept payment, and unlike credit cards, there are no chargebacks, which have been a huge problem for escort agencies in the past." Oh, geez, that's kind of a dick move, isn't it? You sleep with the hooker, then you call up the credit card company and do a chargeback?
Mm-hmm.
It also means that escorts are not handling large amounts of cash, which reduces the risk of theft or robbery. Few personal details are exchanged when using Bitcoin. It's simple and efficient and a safe method of payment. And as we've mentioned, they can get the QR code tattooed right there on the butt cheek.
Brings a whole new meaning to tramp stamp.
Oh.
Just scan it. That's all you have to do.
Well, let's skip ahead here a little bit.
I mean, because also, you know how the barcodes and the barcode tattoos and QR codes, like, they stop working after after a while because the skin starts sagging. It also serves as an expiration date for the hooker. I'm sorry, Candy, your co's not working anymore. Time to put you out to pasture.
The cost for 1 hour of a standard lady's time is 2.5 Bitcoin. 90 minutes is 3.75 Bitcoin. A dinner date is 5 Bitcoin. And an overnight will cost you 14 Bitcoin. Additional hours are 2 Bitcoin each. 1 hour of an elite lady's time is 2.75 Bitcoins. 90 minutes is 4.75. A dinner date is 5.25. And an overnight will cost you 15 Bitcoin. And additional hours are 2.25 Bitcoin each. Wait,
she got all her teeth.
That's what I want to know. What makes them elite? Like, do they spin and shit? They better be able to spin.
I don't know. I think Fox may have it there. They have their teeth. we are kind of talking about a British escort agency.
Oh yeah, yeah. So, I think the elites definitely have their teeth fixed.
Ooh. I just noticed in the IRC. Hey, Psychros. You can listen to the stream if you have the Flash Player installed right in your browser. It does pop up and work. If it doesn't work, I know personally I use the Winamp app, the free one. You can just punch in the IP address of the stream, like http://the/live, and it'll pick it up.
If his stream's they're talking broken, about some, how is he hearing you right now?
They're going talking at it about
in IRC.
Some app in the IRC I've never heard of, so I just thought I would. Yeah, anyways, now here's the fun part. At current Bitcoin exchange rates, that puts an hour of the standard companionship at $309 75 cents, and $340 for an hour of elite time. So yeah, the article goes on talking about how it's not exactly the first use of Bitcoins for sex. There's apparently a subreddit called Girls Gone Bitcoin where you can pay girls Bitcoin to send you nudie pics. I don't know why, but you could.
That's the dumbest thing ever. Just Google titties and they're free.
Profit?
Yeah.
There is actually, no that's question mark, question mark.
You could set up like, yes, profit. I'm a digital whore. Send me Bitcoins. Yes, here's a random image or link of boobs. BRB setting up new screen name.
So now, next time you're on Girls That Girls Gone Bitcoin, it may be Fox.
If you've been on Girls Gone, if you've been on that site, it may have already been me.
So, I don't know. They're still talking about apps in the IRC. We just need to write our own.
I may do that.
I may just.
I did send somebody a picture of Madman's ass one time.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. We did do that. So, all right. Let's
get racist.
Yeah, let's get racist.
You need to put the "Me Love You Long Time" back in.
This is the best part.
Dude, where's the old one? The old one's not in the new soundboard. I'll have to re-add it in sometime. Well, let's see if I can find it real quick. Somebody fill time while I go look for sounds.
Today's random sound brought to you by...
I was going to say, like, if you were to set up a screen name, Fox, what would your screen name be?
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Aniqua Shanae Corner Winch.
You had to go there.
I had to go there.
All right.
Is that enough time, sir? If you're pimping your digital wares, what would your screen name be?
Faladina.
Me love you long time.
I see what you did there, sir, and that is fucking perfect. Except for you know that it's probably already taken by the actual.
So what I had for Digital Dojo tonight's actually fairly simple. It's a Android app from Kismet. It's, if you go to kismetwireless.net/android-swm, it's the Smarter Wi-Fi Manager. Pretty much what this thing does is it runs in the background and it learns where you turn Wi-Fi on and off and what networks you connect to. And once it's learned what networks you use, it uses your cell phone towers to figure out when you're near your Wi-Fi access points that you actually use and will turn your Wi-Fi on. And then when you leave the range of one of your regular Wi-Fi access points, it will turn the Wi-Fi off. So I've seen other apps that do this, but do it with the GPS. And I hate doing that because my GPS, I don't know about you guys, but if I leave the GPS on my phone on all the time, it runs the battery way down and way fast.
Yeah. Well, not to mention you could be in a building where you don't get GPS signal, but you service because they have repeaters in the building.
Right. So what this thing does is it learns what apps you use and turns your Wi-Fi on and off for you, which is kind of cool. The other big reason that this is nice is it lets you block Wi-Fi networks. So if you tell it, I never want to connect to a Wi-Fi hotspot called Linksys or AT&T hotspot, it won't let you. It will not. Nice. It will not use them. It will turn the Wi-Fi off. So if you have a bunch of oddball networks that you never want to connect to, this app will let you blacklist Wi-Fi networks.
That's
which
cool. Yeah, that's
I
good.
Think is nice.
Yeah, exactly.
So one, the whole turning of Wi-Fi on and off automatically for you is kind of cool. But blacklisting Wi-Fi is even better. Now, they talk about on the page how they're going to be adding schedules as well so that the Wi-Fi won't get, you know, you can schedule when it will turn on and off. I think you can probably do that with Tasker already. But
this could make word driving really funny.
Yeah, actually it could. So, but I just love the idea that it uses your cell phone towers, not the GPS, to figure out when it should turn the Wi-Fi back on.
Right. Yeah, that's awesome.
So that's really the other cool thing is, they're doing an experiment with this app. They're putting it out as open source, but they're still charging for it in the App Store. It's like $3 in the App Store, but there's nothing to stop you from grabbing the code and just building it yourself if you wanted to run it for free. So I'm not quite sure what they're trying to prove doing that, but they're trying to prove something, I guess, to themselves.
Are they just showing like transparency for, look, we're not selling all your data to the NSO. Wait, the NSA already has this now.
Yeah. Yeah.
They know what kind of creepy porn you surf when you go and connect to this random hotspot and the party van's going to be there waiting for you next time. That goes and looks at horrible, horrible porn every Wednesday night at 2:30 outside, you know, Ethel's apartment because she has an unsecured Wi-Fi network. Send the van.
How did you know?
Because I went war driving with you that time.
Oh, that one time at war driving camp?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you
Cycros
stuck a
is talking about
directional
batteries.
Antenna in your ass.
Cycros is talking about external batteries in the IRC, and yeah, I've got one too. I've got a nice 22,000 milliamp battery, and that thing's awesome for ingress and a few other things. Actually, I find it charges my phone better than the...
Yeah, the one that I got at Fry's Electronics in Indianapolis does not compare to the one that you had. It charged my phone from, I'm going to be worrying the rest of the night, to 80%, but yeah, yours is a lot better for what it does. I'm definitely going to be picking one of those up.
It wasn't terribly expensive. I got it on Amazon. But
yeah, it was like $30 on Amazon. I still got the link, actually.
Yeah, I mean, it's great for what it does. I've like left the thing in my backpack for an hour and it fully charged my iPad. So it's like, wow, that's nice.
I wanted to just also work in another, you know, name drop of Fry's Electronics because they haven't paid us to stop saying their name yet.
But this thing blacklisting certain Wi-Fi networks, because I don't know about you guys, but if you're running standard ROMs on your phones, like mine, I've got an AT&T phone. I noticed when I left the Wi-Fi on, the damn thing was connecting to all these AT&T hotspots all over town, like in, you know, hardware stores and shit like that. I was like, I don't want my phone on your damn network.
Exactly.
Especially now that I'm goofing around with the Chromecast, I don't know when my phone's going out to the Wi-Fi to search for other Chromecasts, and I'm sure that's all kinds of great security fun. Like, what the hell is my phone beaconing out? I haven't managed to catch the beacon on on a capture yet, but I haven't actually been trying. I need to do that sometime just to see what all it's sending out when it's looking for Chromecasts. Because I want to see about possibly setting up something to listen to see if I can steal somebody's Netflix credentials. I mean, whoop-de-doo, it's Netflix, right? But how many people use the same password for everything?
That's a good point.
But imagine the awkward situations you could create for this person by watching, you know, specific things, and they go to have a, you know, party where they're watching a new episode of something, and their recently watched is all, you know, crazy tantric German porn.
Or, you know, you can just go for the bazaar and do a whole bunch of My Little Pony.
Yes, that too.
So, I'm trying to think of things that are actually on Netflix that would be crazy embarrassing for somebody to... I guess like a whole bunch of really bad 80s movies.
Oh, or like the lesbian and gay shows or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, they've got a whole bunch of like documentaries.
Especially if you like know whose password you're stealing and it's like the local preacher.
Oh.
But then you log in and those are already like the top recommendations anyway.
Mason, somebody did port Fire Sheep for Android and then decided to not. The guy who wrote Fire Sheep ported it. But you should look into an application called Desploit. That thing is great fun. Just be careful on what networks you use it on, because it does the same thing. So, yeah, I'm not sure if I should be watching the IRC when we're trying to do a show or not, because I'll sit there and answer questions from the IRC.
At least if you announce you're doing it, so it's just like dead air while Morps is reading something.
Yeah.
Like, and now from the IRC, all bearings to a prostitute's head, what the fuck?
Oh, wait, they got a link. I probably should not click that.
Do it. Click the link.
Oh, God.
And it's Goatsy.
Why is it so red?
Oh, you know, I forgot to pick music to close out
the
show.
Those poor old people ran out of red ink on that printer.
What? I heard that, you know, some people might have printed 50 copies of Goatsy on an unsecured wireless printer. I heard that was possible.
Yeah, I read that article too. It happened. That's what I was saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where the fuck are Morps? Fine music.
No, we're good. I got
faster.
It. I've gone faster. We've got it. We're good to go. So, of course, listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Big just put a whole bunch of new music in, I think. Maybe not. I don't know. He was doing that right around the time we lost the box, and it's been running okay since then, so I don't think it's going to fall down again. I was kind of worried about that, but seems like it's doing okay, so we're going to probably start trying to move more stuff onto the broadcast box, because I've got some really fun ideas for once. You know, it kind of sucks understanding security, because it's like I've got some of these really fun ideas for things we can do at the stream, but it's like, yeah, I'm not opening that up from everywhere. I've got to really know where it's coming from and lock shit down, because but then, you know, I turn around and watch web developers who just open up the, you know, everything to the world, but they get their applications done a hell of a lot faster. So it's like, on one hand, it's like, yeah, my shit doesn't get hacked as often. On the other hand, it takes me 5 times as long to write it, and I still occasionally get hacked. I don't know.
Inboxed VM.
Yeah. So anyways, of course, as I was saying, listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Pure Decking on every Thursday. Shoot the Noise on Wednesdays. I don't know when he's coming off hiatus, but I know he's wanting to bring that back. The Missing Dialogues on Tuesdays. Of course, I Have Nothing on Saturdays. The Galaxy 15 radio site, the Twitter handle, which our auto Twitter plugin for the website is, I don't know if it's borked or not. It seems to be kind of half working. It'll post things, but it's not automatically doing it. You kind of have to go in and tell it to do it per post. So I don't know what's up with that. I need to explore to get a better one. The Galaxy 15 Radio Sim on OS Grid, feedback form, the subreddit, the IRC, which apparently I will read during the show and answer stupid questions from. So actually, I don't know. Most of what they were talking about in the IRC wasn't actually stupid. So
that's a good conversation. Yeah. Check it out.
Yeah, so That's really all I've got. I'm going to hit play on this music unless anybody else has something to throw out here.
Well, don't forget to stop by your local Fry's Electronics and tell them Galaxy 15 sent you.
You're sure to get that phone call of, would you all please stop?
We will for a small administrative fee.
The people you're sending here are creeping us out. Please stop. All right, here we go.